the rest of us who are not the global elites. We are always the ones to lose out. We are always the ones paying these international fines and debts. And, you know, I want to say, what good is being a supposed world superpower when our people are unable to access healthcare, unable to feed our families, unable to save for retirement? You know, we hear time and time again that we allegedly can't even find the money to pay our teachers adequately. And so, you know, in this question that you're asking, you know, I think we need to ask ourselves, like, will these continued aggressions and battles for power, right, world stage power, improve the conditions for anyone anywhere, or will they just consolidate wealth and capital as they have before? And, you know, I think it's really, really important that we remember working class people in the US, working class people all over the Asia Pacific, and that includes China too, right? Our working people everywhere are struggling to survive. The conditions just keep getting worse. And I hope to see in all of this that the international working class solidarity movement grow to provide a strong united front and collectively provide answers and solutions for all of these really difficult questions.
And we see organizing happening in all of the countries, all the worker, the workers' movements within all the countries impacted by IPIF.
That's right.
Against the further degradation of conditions. So yes. how can our listeners support your efforts, and how can people keep informed?
So folks can visit us at our website, which is tradejusticeedfund.org. That's ed, E-D as in education. And there you can find fact sheets and videos about IPEF to learn more. You can also find tools that will allow you to write directly to IPEF negotiators. And you can also sign up for our monthly activist briefings. We're also organizing around upcoming APEC meetings, which are the Asia Pacific Economic Forum that meets annually. And this year, really excitingly, the US is hosting them. And so they'll be right in our backyard in August in Seattle. So really looking forward to the coming months of organizing around that as well. And I hope you join us.
So tradejusticeedfund.org, all one word.
Yes.
And are we trying to send a particular message to our congressional representatives in this struggle, senators or congresspeople?
Yes, folks should definitely feel welcome to push their elected officials to demand democracy, right? Why do they feel comfortable being locked out of the room on these decisions? That shouldn't be the case, right? And so folks should definitely feel comfortable reaching out to relevant officials to ask, what can they do to open up this democratic process?
Great. Well, Ime, thank you. That wraps it up for this episode of Labor Radio, this Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. on 90.7 FM KBOO. We've been talking with Ime Hsiao of the Trade Justice Education Fund. I'm Jamie Partridge. Stay tuned for Prison.
This is Medea Benjamin. I hope you listen to Community Radio KBOO 90.7.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.
You're listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. Today we're talking with Jesse Neville, chair of the Uhuru Solidarity Movement and former mayoral candidate in St. Petersburg, Florida. Also an organizer of campaigns for white reparations to the African community. Jesse, welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Thank you. So on July 29th, the FBI raided seven homes in St. Petersburg, Florida, and also in St. Louis, Missouri, targeting the Uhuru movement and the African People's Socialist Party. They named four unindicted co-conspirators who are possibly facing jail time, or at least perhaps a trial. And that's Chairman Omali Yeshitela, Akile Anai, Penny Hess, and yourself. Jesse, can you tell us, so why did the FBI raid your homes and the offices of the African People's Socialist Party?
Well, thank you again for having me on. And I'm very honored to be able to speak with you and all the listeners of KVU in Portland. And as you mentioned, on July 29th of last year at 5 a.m. here in St. Louis, Missouri, where I now live, and 6 a.m. in St. Petersburg, Florida, so at the same time, in two different time zones, the U.S. government, through its secret political police organization known as the FBI, carried out a coordinated multi-state military violent raid of the seven homes and offices belonging to leaders and members of the Uhuru movement. The chief target of those raids was Omali Yeshitela, the chairman of the African People's Socialist Party, who at 81 years old has now dedicated over six decades of his life to fighting for the liberation of African people, Black people in the United States, and African people everywhere around the world who are facing colonial domination and oppression. And the attacks also included raids on the homes of the other people you mentioned, Akile Anai in St. Petersburg, Florida, the Uhuru House Community Center. It's a longstanding Black community institution there in St. Petersburg, Florida, and the homes of Penny Hess and Kitty Riley, who are leading members of the African People's Solidarity Committee, of which Penny Hess is the chair, and the Uhuru Solidarity Center in South St. Louis, which has an apartment on the second floor where I live, along with Amanda Carlozzi. We are members of the African People's Solidarity Committee and Uhuru Solidarity Movement. And our assignment is to work in the white community to organize other white people like ourselves to stand in solidarity with the struggle of African people and all oppressed peoples, the Mexican, indigenous, Arab, and colonized peoples around the world who are fighting for liberation and self-determination. And our slogan is unity through reparations. We work under the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party and Chairman Omali Yeshitela to build a front of the African liberation movement behind enemy lines in the colonizer white population, which is a brilliant strategy that the Uhuru movement launched back in 1976, and which for now 47 years has been winning white people to the stand of white solidarity with Black power. And this movement came under assault on July 29th for doing exactly that, for fighting for African liberation, for fighting for a different kind of world in which people, African people, Black people, and other colonized people are not shot down in the streets of this country by the police, which continues to happen now in 2022 more frequently than any previous year, and where African people are not stuffed into prisons, 2.3 million people in prison in this country, most of them African people, where these colonial conditions do not exist. And the bogus charge that the US government and the FBI used to justify this attempt to really to assassinate Chairman Omali Yeshitela and other members, and especially the chairman. They came at him with assault rifles. They pointed the laser infrared sights of their weapons on his chest. They set off flashbang grenades. They had drones. I mean, this was not an FBI agent with a briefcase showing up, flashing his ID and asking if he can search your house. This was what you would see the US military doing to oppress people in Afghanistan. They did that in the North Side African community of St. Louis to the home of Chairman Omali Yeshitela and Deputy Chair Ona Zenaya Yeshitela. And the reason they gave for it was this bogus lie that this movement, which has fought for freedom, Uhuru means freedom. This movement, which has fought for freedom for African people around the world for 50 years since its founding in 1972, is actually being orchestrated by the Russian government. And this, in addition to being untrue, is insulting, slanderous, and offensive to African people who have always, from the moment they were attacked by Europeans and put into a state of colonial oppression, have always fought for their own freedom, their own self-determination, and required no influence or intervention from Russians or anybody else to know that they are being oppressed and to know that their fight for freedom is one that is righteous and necessary.
Thank you. I mentioned at the beginning of this interview that you do campaigns for white reparations to the African community. Could you talk about why it's important for white people to care about reparations?
Definitely, definitely. I think that's a very, very important question. And the question of reparations is one that, again, this movement has campaigned around this for many years. The African People's Socialist Party's chairman, Amalia Shetela, actually created a campaign in the early 1980s to make reparations a household word. The Uhuru movement held the first world tribunal on reparations to African people in Brooklyn, New York in 1982, which brought together international forces, witnesses, and experts to come to the conclusion, the verdict, that the United States government was guilty of the crime of genocide against African people in the United States, according to the definition of genocide provided by the United Nations Convention on the Punishment and Prevention of the Crime of Genocide, and that therefore the United States government owed reparations to African people, not just for the enslavement of African people that built the US economy, but for everything else that has been carried out by this system, by the colonial state, and by white people against African people for hundreds of years. The lynchings, the convict leasing, the terror and oppression that has been carried out in a myriad of forms and continues to this day. And what was calculated at that time is that $14.2 trillion in today's currency was owed to African people for the cost of unpaid labor alone. And we feel that this is an incredibly important thing for white people to reckon with and come to terms with, because it calls on us to face the truth about our relationship as white people to African people and to the rest of humanity. And the fact that, you know, Chairman Amalia Shetela created this understanding of what is called the colonial mode of production, which means that everything we have access to as white people, everything, every democratic right, every resource, every ability for us to have families that live in peace and prosperity, to send our children to college, to have dreams and aspirations, comes at the expense of the most brutal exploitation, torture, oppression, theft of resources, theft of human beings, theft of ideas, culture, science, knowledge, genius of African and oppressed peoples that is enforced by systematic violence and coercion under this colonial system. That is the basis for white people's prosperity and democracy and opportunity under this social system. But this social system is in a profound crisis, as Chairman Amalia Shetela has helped us to understand, because it rests upon this pedestal of the oppression of African people. And Africans around the world are rising up. Oppressed people around the world are rising up. They're saying, we are not going to just sit by and die while white people and colonialism takes everything from them to benefit somebody else at their expense. And to the extent that we begin to identify our interests, not with our own ruling class, not with Biden, Trump, or anybody else, not with the so-called 1% that bleed the world dry for their own enrichment, but the minute we begin to identify our true interests as human beings with African people, with indigenous people, with the colonized peoples of the world, then we have a future. That's why our slogan is unity through reparations. Reparations is about repairing the damage of hundreds of years of ongoing pain and suffering that has been inflicted for our benefit, and often with our complicity and enthusiastic participation. So it means face the reality, take responsibility for it, and then fight with revolutionary optimism and hope to be a part of the new world that African and oppressed peoples are working to bring into existence. That's what reparations means for us as white people. It is a positive, inspiring vision that allows us to join the rest of humanity in building a world without an oppressor and an oppressed.
A lot of white people would probably want to know, what does reparations mean to me? I mean, does it mean like, you know, paying extra in their taxes, or is it like something the government will do? I mean, what does reparations look like?
Well, at the end of the day, reparations, based on the understanding from the Uhuru movement, the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party, Chairman Amalia Shotela, which I just want to again reiterate that my ability to understand or articulate any of these things comes from the fact that I've had the honor and do have the honor to work under the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party and Chairman Amalia Shotela, who have defined all of these things. And what the chairman has said is, at the end of the day, reparations will be defined by the African and oppressed peoples themselves. They will set the terms for what reparations looks like. And Chairman Amalia has always said that reparations is a function of the revolutionary struggle of African people for their liberation. So true reparations will come about in the process of African people reclaiming the stolen value of everything that has been taken from them historically. And right now, what the Uhuru movement is calling on white people to do is to join the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, the organization of white people under the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party, whose task is to actually build a movement inside the white community calling for reparations to African people. And that's why we have the Uhuru Solidarity Center that was raided by the FBI on 2654 Gravois Ave in St. Louis that says unity through reparations, because this is about building a white people's movement for reparations to African people under the leadership of the African Revolution. In particular, a program called the Black Power Blueprint in North St. Louis. If you go to blackpowerblueprint.org, you can see more of what this program is about. And this is a program under the leadership of Deputy Chair Ona Zenaya Shotela, whose home was raided by the FBI, that is building political and economic power in the hands of the Black working class. They're building a women's health center for African working class women who face genocidal conditions of infant and maternal mortality in the United States and in St. Louis in particular. They've built an Uhuru House community center there. They've built farmers markets, community gardens. They're building a community commercial kitchen, an African independence workforce program for African people coming out of the colonial prison system, and so much more. Funding these programs, redistributing the stolen wealth that we have access to towards these programs of Black political and economic self-empowerment is what reparations looks like, based on the leadership of the Uhuru movement. So that's what we're involved in. And we're also at this time building solidarity from the white community with the Hands Off Uhuru, Hands Off Africa campaign that was launched in the aftermath of the FBI and US government's vicious attacks on the African People's Socialist Party. And we're calling on white people to join this struggle against repression, join this struggle. This is a continuation of what this government has always done to African people when they have stood up and struggled for their right to liberation and self-determination, whether it was Marcus Garvey, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, Assata Shakur, Fannie Lou Hamer, so many others who have had to face the wrath of the United States government simply for fighting for the peace and freedom of Black people. We're calling on white people to take a stand, to show our outrage, to show our solidarity with the Uhuru movement, the African community, in fighting back against this bogus attack by the FBI, in donating towards the Legal Defense Fund. $277,000 is needed to have lawyers who will be prepared to go to trial to defend the Uhuru movement and Chairman Amalia Shotela. And I just want to finish this by saying that Chairman Amalia Shotela is 81 years old. So the US government knows they have not been able to stop him for you know, 60 years that he's been politically active. They have tried many times to shut him up, to silence him, to stop him, and they have failed. So this is their last desperate attempt. Their goal is to put Chairman Omali Yeshitela in prison for the rest of his life and force him to die behind bars. And our commitment as the Uhuru Solidarity Movement is to say, no, that will not happen, that we will not allow the colonial state to take Chairman Omali Yeshitela away from the world, from the African Revolution, that the sky is the limit as far as we are concerned in terms of our responsibility to mobilize a massive public response demanding hands off Chairman Omali Yeshitela and hands off the Uhuru movement. So handsoffuhuru.org/donate is a great place for white people to go to learn about how you can actually contribute towards the funding effort to prepare for what is expected to be indictments and arrests of Chairman Omali and other Uhuru leaders within weeks.
What continuing along the conversation about reparations, what do you say to white people who are like, you know, they're white liberals who are sympathetic, but they say, well, that was, you know, that happened in the past. I'm, you know, I'm not racist.
Sure.
And I, you know, I didn't have anything to do with that. What do you say to people like that?
Well, there's no way I could possibly put it better than what Chairman Omali Yeshitela himself said many years ago when he was addressing this question. He said that, you know, white people today say we didn't have anything to do with it, and African people today didn't have anything to do with it, but white people inherited the wealth of the slave master, and African people inherited the poverty of the enslaved. So white people and African people, we both inherited the same legacy of slavery, but that legacy of slavery looks completely different for us because of colonialism, because of the colonial mode of production. And that's something that I think is really important for us to understand. And as for the question of racism, this is an important point, because this is one of the key understandings that the Uhuru movement and the chairman have really struggled for us to understand. As white people who want to take a stand, who want to unite with African people, who want to oppose police brutality and mass incarceration and the healthcare system and what it does to African people and everything, that unlearning our racism is not the solution. That, as Chairman has said, racism is the ideological underpinning of the colonial capitalist system. So racism are the set of ideas that white people invented to justify a social system, a mode of production that assaulted Africa in 1415 and initiated a global economy of bringing wealth to and power to white people at the expense of everybody else. So it is possible, as Penny Hess, who I know has spoken on this program, as she has said before in her book, Overturning the Culture of Violence, that you can go through an unlearning racism workshop, which I think many well-intentioned white people do, and you can come out of it feeling like you have freed yourself of racist attitudes, but we still go back to our white neighborhoods, and African people still go back to the hell that is life under the US colonial social system. And that's why we are called on to take a principled and practical stand against colonialism, against the colonial mode of production from which we benefit, regardless of whether or not you know, our ancestors were directly involved in slavery or whatever. The entire white world sits on this pedestal of the oppression of African people. And the way we can change that is through uniting with the stand of reparations. And the last thing I'll say on that is that, you know, this is not a statement that minimizes in any way or denies the fact that even white people face oppression, marginalization, and pain under this social system. This is an anti-life, anti-human social system that we live under that was built on the enslavement of African people, built on the backs of African people, and built on the stolen land and genocide against the indigenous people. So this social system is not going to value human life for anybody. And we definitely recognize that white LGBTQ people under this social system face marginalization, pain, and oppression. We recognize that white women face abuse and degradation under the social system. White workers face exploitation under the social system. And what Chairman Amali Shetela is saying to us is that the way we fight back, that all of those conditions happen under white power, under a white power system. So the way that white LGBTQ people, white women, white workers, white people who are concerned about the destruction of the environment, the way we fight back against all of that is by fighting for Black power, by fighting for reparations to African people and solidarity with the African Revolution. That is the way forward for all of humanity, including us.
Can you comment on the backlash against the racial justice movement that has risen up in the last 2 years since the George Floyd uprising?
Well, I think that what we're seeing in terms of backlash and reactionary kinds of responses to the uprisings of African people in this country is weakness and desperation on the part of a ruling class and a social system that knows that it is losing power. And that is something that is clear all throughout the world, that the United States, Europe, colonialism is dying and it is being killed by oppressed and colonized people everywhere. And we saw after the uprisings in 2020, after the murder of George Floyd, that there were African people and oppressed people all around the world who were tearing down statues of slave masters and tearing down statues of colonizers and colonial missionaries and other kinds of things. So the anti-colonial consciousness is spreading around the world. And that is in no small part due to the influence and work of Chairman Amali Shetela and the Uhuru movement for the past 50 years. So we're looking at weakness and desperation on their part. And I've never seen a more glaring example of that than the fact that they put on their bulletproof vests, got their assault rifles together, got their flashbang grenades, their drones, their battering rams, and came and banged down the doors and handcuffed and assaulted Chairman Amali Shetela and other leaders of the Uhuru movement on July 29th of last year. That was a sign of desperation and weakness on their part, and the rising strength and imminent victory of the African liberation movement on the other hand.
Thanks. So what's coming up next? What's next for the Uhuru movement in the next couple of years? What's going on with this? Is there going to be a trial? And how can people find out more about this and, you know, support resistance to these FBI raids?
You can go to handsoffuhuru.org. You can sign up. You can join the campaign. You can build a local Hands Off Uhuru committee in Portland. We have members and supporters of the Uhuru movement in Portland that we can link you up with. Four of the people who we know are being targeted by this FBI attack, but we don't know the full extent of what the government plans to do. So we need a lot of support from anyone who can. handsoffuhuru.org/donate. There will be a trial, but as Chairman Amali Shetela has said, for us, the trial has already begun, because the chairman's intention, the party's intention, is to put them on trial, to put the FBI on trial, to put the US government on trial, to put colonialism on trial, because they are the ones who have to answer for the fact that hundreds of years they have spent attacking, murdering, surveillancing, stalking, harassing, and imprisoning and assassinating African leaders. And it is not going to go down like that this time around. And I also want to invite people to go to usmconvention2023.eventbrite.com or uhurusolidarity.org and check out an upcoming national conference that the Uhuru Solidarity Movement is having here in St. Louis. It's called White People Say No to the FBI War on Black Liberation. And it's our national convention, March 11th and 12th, 2023. Again, you can register and find out more at usmconvention2023.eventbrite.com.
Thanks. And if white people would like to learn more about reparations and educate themselves on the topic of reparations, do you have any sources you'd recommend for people to check out?
Definitely. I would definitely check out all of the books of Chairman Omali Yeshitela. You can see them at burningspearmarketplace.com. He's written books like Vanguard, The Advanced Detachment of the African Revolution, and Uneasy Equilibrium. And also Penny Hess, Overturning the Culture of Violence, is an excellent book for people to read, as well as the Burning Spear newspaper. These are all publications put out by the Uhuru movement that contain a lot of history and insight into the reparations demand. So that's what I would recommend.
Thank you very much. We've been talking today with Jesse Nevels from the Uhuru movement and the African People's Socialist Solidarity Committee. Is that correct? Thank you so much, Jesse, for joining us on Prison Pipeline.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Derek Gibson, a prisoner in the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections at SCI Pine Grove, a classified restricted release prisoner housed in indefinite isolation of solitary confinement the past 10 years. That means in the hole. And I say, in all due respect, that we have to have unity and continue to fight against oppression, systematic racism, and for criminal justice reform, simply because we have not overcome yet. How can we win without unity, devotion, commitment, and dedication? How can we win without strength, courage, endurance, and strong will? How can we win? We have to truly support the movement and continue to march forward, bend, but don't break, I say. In solidarity, author and prisoner Derek Gibson, JP 2090, EAD of CSCI Vine Grove.
These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad,